Hello and welcome to the 9th episode of the 2-for-1 podcast, brought to you by Anchor and In the Lane, a Miami Heat and NBA podcast. Sean, one episode away from 10, man.
I am shocked that we have not been canceled yet. It's amazing.
Yeah, we got really close that one night with the Miami flu.
At the 10th episode, I'm adding this to my resume, just to let you know.
I'm sure Norris Cole will love this. Your Connecticut Suns put a thump in on the New York Liberty the other night.
85-64. 64 points, lowest scoring game for the New York Liberty. I took a little satisfaction. It's the first, kind of WNBA, I guess, shit talking that we've had between each other. sent a little text, a little smiley face. And it's interesting because I thought last week that the Sun were starting to fade back maybe to where they belong, and they've stepped it up. I mean, the Liberty have had a great season, and they put a whooping on them.
Yeah, you almost – it's funny, even as a fan of the team, you almost didn't expect the Sun – you specifically didn't expect the sum of the parts to be better than what they are, but you got to give them number one in the power ratings for the league.
Yeah, and Jonquel Jones had a good game against the Liberty, and she's going to be going for Olympic qualifying. I saw this earlier in the week. They're suspending her, in quotes, so that she's gone and going to be trying to qualify for her country for the Olympics. So it's one of those weird things that sometimes you see in the WNBA that you would almost never see in the NBA with, players leaving and having to do something like this. The NBA kind of schedules their season around the Olympics, where the WNBA, because of its, season being in the summer, it really can't do that. And I think they are taking a little hiatus this year to try to allow players to go over to the Olympics in Japan. And I guess maybe don't quote me on that, but it's interesting to see that, one of the most important players on that team are going to be gone for, I think, 4 weeks.
Yeah, well, you saw that too with the Storm, right, and Plum doing 3v3 for Team USA this year. Which I think, and I made a joke kind of in passing, but ESPN's power ranking has the Seattle Storm at the number one position for power rankings, basing that completely off nothing, because if you're watching the court game, the Connecticut Sun are definitely the best team in the league. But I'm sure that part of that analysis is, hey, Plum's back now, so they're going to be even better, right? But it's definitely a weird occurrence, and it, like, being a fan of this league now and watching it happen, players come and go throughout the season, it's really awkward and kind of sucks for the teams that some stuff is structured this way.
Yeah. And speaking of the Storm, Jewel Lloyd, buzzer beater in overtime, 105-102 over the Dallas Wings.
Ice in her veins.
Yeah. That's, you just love to see that type of stuff, because that's only going to help bring more exposure, bring more attention to the league when you have those, amazing finishes, amazing individual plays from any team. It doesn't matter if it's Seattle, who's maybe one of the best, if not the best team in the league. And so that's just exciting to see that over the past week.
Yeah, the National Buzzer Beater League is just continuing to produce gems. I mean, it started with a Sabrina buzzer beater to start the season, and we just keep getting more and more of them. And dunks. Taurasi dunks, Sean. This just keeps producing.
That's something else. And, it's good to see. It's good to see it pop up on your Instagram feed. It's, it's getting more and more attention. It's only going to continue to grow. And, it's a proud thing that they're continuing to get more exposure to women's basketball.
So part of that growing exposure and some things that they're trying in the league right now is the Commissioner's Cup, right? This interseason award that doesn't really have too much physical, tangible significance, but could mean a lot to the fan base. When you think about midseason tournaments and happening in soccer and the WNBA and potentially the NBA, where do you fall on that kind of concept? Like, what do you think about that?
As a fan, I like it. Anytime you can get more basketball, it's great. As a player or as someone in the organization, I think that they're going to be out on it, because as you saw, when you're shortening the offseason, when you're adding more games, the wear and tear, it starts to diminish the product after a while. And so even though I would like to watch it, I don't think it's something that I would want to maybe ruin or diminish the product the NBA has right now.
Don't you feel like the players, if they get to a championship type game, that the competitive nature would come out? Maybe not getting to that point, but once you're there physically, that game is happening.
What would you put as the reward of the tournament? Would it be a draft compensation, or would it be money? Towards the players, I think that would be the biggest motivation. If I were putting this together, I would try to put some sort of cash incentive towards the players.
I would too. And the players at the end of the day are, and this is where my point's coming in. I think athletes at that caliber are the most competitive human beings in the world. And I think if you give them something to win, they're going to go for it. Just everything in between, all the Commissioner's Cup games, I don't know how hard these girls are playing for those games. But if cash is the incentive, I mean, the WNBA is a significantly underpaid league. More money will not hurt.
And both those leagues can find sponsors. TV sponsors, or whether it's, different businesses. I think that that's where you can come up with that money. The question then becomes, are the teams going to be motivated to push themselves for the players' benefit in their pockets? Are the Miami Heat going to say, let's go all out on this so that you guys can make some money? Or are they going to think, I don't really care about this Commissioner's Cup. I care about the NBA championship.
And so this is where I think that it's more of a just do it and implement it, and you're not going to feel the effects till 3 or 4 years after you do it. Mm-hmm. Those bragging rights won't matter until there's a culture around it. So in soccer, when they have these inner season tournaments, they have significance because they have just literal significance to the fan base and to the players. They matter because they've existed. So in the NBA, I think I know we're getting to this, but I think you have to start trying to put things in there like that. You need to continue to grow the salary cap. You need to make sure there's significant interest all year long. That's what the play-in tournament is for at the end of the season. We can get something in the first half of the season, like a Commissioner's Cup. I think it's a good idea. With them, though, I would gear it more towards charity donations. I think those guys really care about that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And, you think back to Summer League, which is a completely different level of competition. But in Summer League, it used to just be they played in Orlando, they played in Utah, and then they added Vegas. And I think prior to that, they played in California. But I remember watching games in Orlando, and, it was competitive, and you're trying to watch the rookies. But they added that element in Vegas of a tournament, and more teams go to Vegas. And obviously Vegas is a great place to go, and it's more widely broadcast and shown on TV. But that tournament, when it gets to those last couple games, it's good TV to watch. Like you generally get good basketball in what used to be a dead time, like in the summer of July, that the competitiveness of those guys. So maybe you see something like in the NBA where, maybe a LeBron James doesn't play because he's an older, veteran player, but maybe the younger guys that are at the end of the bench, maybe that's something that you can use. Maybe some teams elect to use it that way, where it doesn't necessarily count in the standings. If it's a set alone tournament and you just want to get younger guys more exposure, more experience, and maybe other teams go right after it and they play their best guys and they try to win it for whatever the incentive is. Who knows? The good thing is Adam Silver always is willing to try new things. He's very forward thinking.
And he doesn't care to wait for public opinion to shift to that way. Like, he'll just do it and see what happens. Leaders like Adam Silver and leaders like Pat Riley have let their voices been heard. We had a extensive Pat Riley conference where a lot was said and then nothing was said, Sean. Coming out of that, what were some of your favorite quibs? What were some of your favorite Riley moments?
He's amazing. Like, he can just say things so beautifully with words, while at the same time telling you absolutely nothing. And it's amazing because you can have two sides of Heat Twitter. Like, some people are divided on, should Duncan come back? Should he not come back? You can listen to the same quote from Pat Riley, and one side is like, oh yeah, Duncan's coming back. He's too valuable. We're not going to let him go. And the other side listens to the same quote and is like, yep, Duncan's gone. We don't value him. Spo doesn't use him right. Fire Spo, and we got to move on. And it's all the same quote. You know, like, Pat Riley is so good at that postseason press conference.
My favorite thing that he does is, like, very immediately when the conference starts, he accepts all responsibility for everything that happened during the year. And then throughout the press conference, he'll sprinkle in, like, who he really thinks at fault is. It's like, here's a little bit of accountability for everybody. But those moments are great, and he's a master, dude. He really is. Do you feel like you gained any insight on where they're going next year with what he said?
Well, you know, your colleagues at Five Reasons brought up a good point of over history. Really, if you just listen to the first, like, 2 or 3 minutes, that's where you're going to gain the most insight. And in those first 2 or 3 minutes, he really says, like, we understand what we have in our nucleus, but we know also what we need to do to improve the team. So I think it's obvious, but we're going to do some changing. We're not going to just run this back. There's going to be some upgrades somewhere. And, you know, he doesn't really give you details. He can't say, hey, we're really looking at Kyle Lowry, you know, or, hey, he did God bless Damian Lillard. That was
pretty nice. He God blessed it. It was my favorite. Okay. That's my favorite quote right there. That one.
I think in the tampering rules and, like, the bylaws, as long as you say God bless, you can talk about whoever you want.
Magic Johnson would have loved to know that one.
David Stern, I think he got that in there somehow. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, Pat gave you a little bit of insight that, look, we know we need to make changes. He has to say that to the franchise and to the fan base. You know, we got to make changes. We got to improve. That's what everybody wants. How he's going to do it, when he's going to do it, it's time will tell.
To the fans that only listen to 2 for 1 and don't listen to any other South Florida sports content, this will be of news to you, I'm sure. But if you listen to anything else, prep yourselves, guys, because 6-7 players. I mean, we're looking at a real shakeup to this roster, and I think we can almost kind of put a pin in a couple names already.
So, speaking of putting a pin and popping a bubble, the Lakers are out. They are joining us in Cancun. Welcome to the island. Get yourself a margarita or a daiquiri, whatever poolside bar, whatever you want to do here. What do you think, you know, about the Lakers going out in the first round? And then let's transition it over to the bubble flute conversation that we and the Lakers are both involved in.
So nationally, this narrative is now accepted, which is fun. But last season fucking sucked. It just was terrible for everybody. And the Clippers are overcoming it because they have a literal robot leading their team, but outside of that, everybody else faltered and got worse or got injured. Like, even the Nuggets, like Jamal Murray's injury, which was pretty devastating, but there's a couple ACLs this year. Listen, I'm so glad the Lakers lost. I couldn't be happier. I'm glad they're here with us making their little bubble guppy sounds, because we needed proof that this season was just really crappy for everybody that was involved in a late postseason run. You do kind of wish you would see LeBron playing longer into the postseason. I just enjoy watching greatness. But we have a lot of great teams in there right now and a lot of great players. But were you happy to see their demise?
Absolutely. Yeah. I was so glad they were out. And it's not because I appreciate LeBron too. And I don't, you know, there's certain sections of Heat Twitter and Heat fans that hate LeBron. You have to respect what he did for us, and you still have to respect his greatness overall in the history of the game. And I would love to see him play. I also am glad to see the Lakers go out, because it helps our narrative, because not only are we out, they're out. The Celtics obviously are out. Like you said, the Nuggets squeaked by. It makes it so impressive what Jokic did. To think about, he played every single game. That's why he's MVP, you know. And despite the injuries that they've had, he's been able to carry them, you know, to this point. And it's going to be interesting to see if he can get them out of the second round. I don't think we're going to talk about this in a second, but I don't think they are. I think, you know, Phoenix is going to be a little bit too much, but you know, we'll get to that in just a second.
He picked a great year to lose a ton of weight, didn't he?
Everybody else put on quarantine weight, and Jokic found a way to lose it.
There's some people taking weight off and some people putting weight on. Tyler Hero is adding a lot of weight to his family this year. Him and Katia are pregnant. Congratulations to the two. There was a lot of discourse on Twitter, Sean, about Tyler Hero and his significant other and their pregnancy. You already look fed up with this conversation.
So here was my reaction when I saw the Instagram post come across my feed. It was like, wow. And it wasn't like, wow, like, oh my God, it's going to affect his jump shot. It was, wow. I just, you know, we had heard that there were rumors that she was pregnant, and it was more, wow, like, he's 21 years old. Having a kid is a big thing. And he's not the first person. He's not the last person at that age is going to have a child. But if that's what they want to do, whether it was intentional, accidental, who knows, who cares? They're having a kid. The fact that he put it on his social media, they both put it on their social media, must mean that they are proud of it. You're not going to make a post like that on social media if you were ashamed or upset or angry or anything like that. So as a Heat fan, support your player, that he's proud of something that happened in his life. It's an accomplishment. It's one of the biggest accomplishments of his life. All the other crap that's been said and comments that were made that I don't think either one of us were going to repeat and give them any shine, because it's embarrassing. I just don't understand why someone behind their phone or behind their keyboard would like spend that 15, 30 seconds or whatever it does to craft those 140 characters to say just nonsense into social media.
Me and you have texted so many times this year where we're just like, God, I can't believe the internet is doing this right now. And this was just one of those moments where I just can't believe people sometimes when they stoop to these levels for the 50 likes, bro. Like, the not even the 10 seconds, you know, it goes viral and then it's done. Like, your little post is over.
It's like, you know, I love the Greg Sylvander, what a dumbass tweet.
What a dumbass tweet.
If he got a penny every time I wanted to use that in the past week on comments for Tyler Hero, like, Greg could, I don't know, he could buy 5 reasons from Ethan and have like millions left over, because I don't know how much it would cost, but we'll inquire about that. It's insane. Just like, don't even type it. I don't know if you saw my post. I was like, if you have the urge, instead of clicking tweet, click the cancel button and then click delete. Like, just write it out, make yourself feel better, like, bash him in your head. Do it in maybe your notes or something, but don't send it out to the public. Like, come on, man. It's just stupid.
I just want to continue to address this narrative that Tyler is like this immature child kid, and he's leading a marketing campaign, and he's 21 in the NBA as a starter and then put on the bench and then come back. I have not heard one negative news story about Tyler outside of some like internal Heat stuff about, hey, he might not be taken this season completely seriously because of all of his marketing arrangements. But I mean, that's the worst story we've heard about him. And he is like a young, young professional.
He's not going to be the first or last NBA player to have a child while not being married with a beautiful woman. And it's not going to affect his play.
Nope.
I just don't. It's, who cares? The only thing I really care about is that, one, he's happy, which is going to help him be better on the floor. And two, he gets to work on his lower body, his handle, his jump shot, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
If recent history has taught us anything, he's about to sign one of the largest undrafted free agent deals of all time. That's all I'm saying. Fred VanVleet had a baby, and he is now one of the best players in the Raptors. That was a team that's outside looking in, the Toronto Raptors. But we have a bunch of teams that are still in the playoffs, Sean, and they're not on the couch with us in Cancun. And we saw the stars aligned for the Bucks-Nets. And oh boy, is Bambi out in full force.
I don't think anybody could have predicted that Milwaukee would look this bad. And do we have sympathy for them?
None at all.
Because it's basically the tables have been turned. They were close in the first game. Going into the fourth quarter, it was a competitive game, and then it kind of got away from them. And in game two, they got their doors blown off. Just like in game two, we got our doors blown off. And now they're coming home. And just like we came home and we thought everything was going to be okay, I hope they get the same slaughter we did.
It's hard to even analyze it. I wanted to try and come here with a reason why the Bucks were getting chopped up the way they were. And you can point to a lot of things, but I think what's more surprising is the Bucks can't get their offense off. And I can't quite figure out why. Their half court numbers are great. Their transition numbers are pretty good. It's them boys. Blake Griffin just really good. Blake Griffin's been really good at defense, and he's honestly stepped up on some assignments on Giannis that I just can't believe I'm watching him do. And he's such an X factor for them. And I don't think they game planned for him because he's just kind of cutting them up on the inside. I don't really have analysis for this series. It's so weird.
The Nets are shooting 50, 40, 90 as a team.
Disgusting. That's the most disgusting stat I've ever heard.
I mean, so there's only a couple ways we can go about this. Either the Nets are really, really good, the Heat are really, really bad, or the Bucks won the championship, their championship in the first round.
The first round. Look, I'll tell you this. I really thought going into this series, after watching KD in the last round, and I'm probably one of the bigger KD fans you'll find, I thought Giannis was going to be the best player in this series still. I just thought he had opportunities to score the ball, and he doesn't. He really doesn't.
If you were going to build somebody to defend Kevin Durant because of his length and his ability to score, it would essentially be Giannis.
And he's get the one highlight that you see where Kevin does the between the legs and then drifts left and then pulls back for the shot. Giannis is contesting the ball so well, and all Kevin does is get him moving. Giannis can put his hand in his face all day. Kevin just needs him a little bit away so he can't block this shot, and he's going to nail it.
And they're doing this without James Harden.
James Harden.
It's unreal. I don't want the Nets to win. Like, ultimately, if we look at the final eight, they're not the team I want to win. Are they the favorite to win? I would say absolutely at this point.
Yeah, you look at the landscape. You just got to, again, everything comes back to me for who's the best player on the court. And that guy, that sniper, I mean, he's just one of the best players I've ever seen in my life, man. He's so good.
I thought you were going to say Blake Griffin, but let's move into the other series in the East. Sixers and Hawks. The Hawks stole one on Sunday, take a 1-0 lead. As we're filming right now, they are playing. The Sixers are up late in the third quarter. So, you know, we're to be determined what happens in game two, but it's looking like the Sixers are going to even it back up. What did you see, you know, especially the shocker on Sunday where Atlanta looked tremendous? They looked dominant at times against the Sixers.
Yeah. So that first game, they schemed the 76ers to death, and they got the players that they needed to take shots to take shots. One of the things you can do to the Sixers is just trap Embiid so hard as soon as he touches the ball and get to him early before they can get the ball to him to disrupt that pass and play Ben in the half court and let him and play the passing lanes. You're basically eliminating two guys, with two defenders, but a third person can roam. So it's a 3-on-2 whenever they're running a two-man game with Ben and Joel. And it's, I mean, that's just an easy matchup to win. they just schemed him to death in this game, and I haven't been able to catch a ton of it. They're answering back with power, and I think that's the right way to attack this Hawks team, right? Like, you have to assume if Philadelphia is going to win, they're going to have to use their size to their advantage.
Yeah, and they have so much length. You know, Tobias, Ben is 6'10", you know, playing a guard position. And it's the one thing that I guess is my concern with Philadelphia is I think that they're mentally weak. They really have never, besides Dwight and Danny Green, been to a point where they, you know, have gotten to the top of the mountain or competed at a high level and shown that Joel hasn't done it yet. Ben hasn't done it yet. Tobias hasn't done it yet. And so, you know, if we forecast and we say the Sixers get through and let's assume they play the Nets, I don't think that they can compete with the Nets. And I don't think it's even close. No. I don't, you know, I think that they're going to get exposed in that. If it was Milwaukee, I think it's a more competitive series because of their styles, but they're close. I still think that they did better with their depth this year. I think they need to add more and change some of their parts.
So the same reason I don't think they could beat Atlanta this series, same reason I don't think they could beat the Nets. If you get the defense in motion, it's done. Like, it's done. Right now, Philadelphia is playing a really tough brand of basketball, but I just feel like the Hawks are going to be able to outscore Philly, and I know for a fact the Nets would.
Yeah, and I didn't want to forecast them through the Hawks because I still think that's very much in play. Heat legend Solomon Hill is starting for the Hawks, and I think that's the big picture. I think that's really why they got game one, Heat culture.
Yeah, I mean, the best player on the floor wins games, right? And Solomon Hill will forever be the best player on the floor.
All right, let's move out west. So Jazz and Clippers, they also play later tonight before we record. You know, what do you think is going to happen in this series? Number one team in the West, and the Clippers somehow, some way, squeak past Luka and the Mavericks.
God, I really is this bad? I think the Clippers can sweep them.
Pause the tape. A sweep from the Clippers?
I don't know what the Jazz's defensive strategy is going to be. I also don't have a lot of faith in Jordan Clarkson to. Produce. He's going to have to produce significant scoring off of the bench. And I'm watching where Utah has been strong most of the year with offensive scoring is where the Clippers are strong defensively. Like, I don't know how you're going to score from the wing against Kawhi and Paul George. I'm just not sure where that's coming from. And I don't trust Jordan to be good enough to do it.
Mike Conley's out right now with a hamstring.
So that's tough.
Even more pressure on.
I really like. I'm just trying to find a way for Utah to win, and I can't. Like, it's. I can't come up with a path for them to win a single game. Like, there's no Rudy Gobert going off. That's not happening, right?
Going off for 30 rebounds or something like that.
Maybe. Yeah, like
the only thing that I would say is game one tonight, you have the Clippers on 2 days rest after a 7-game series that they had to fight back. So it may be sort of a schedule loss where they didn't get a lot of rest. They're coming into game one. I think the Jazz have about 5 days rest coming into altitude, going to Salt Lake City. So I think that the Jazz are going to win tonight, but if we're talking for the series, I think I'm picking the Clippers also.
What are you picking them though? Like, do you think they get six? You think it goes six?
So if I'm saying Jazz win game one, I'm going to say that the Clippers leave Utah with a split. So yeah, I'll say Clippers in six. That makes more sense. Winning in LA.
Yeah. I just can't do it. I mean, you can give me gentleman sweep there with them because of the 2 days rest deal, and definitely playing a hard fought 7-game series, by the way, like super hard fought. But I don't know, man. I can't find ways for Utah to win games.
Yeah, that's a tough one. It's just a tough matchup for them. Utah's very good. I think we both agree on that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
The matchup of the Clippers, and if they're playing at their best, again, if you go to the best player on the floor, you saw that in the last two games. Kawhi was just unreal. And he can do that again against Utah because Donovan Mitchell is great. He's not Kawhi. And if they're playing well, I think that they have a talent advantage, even though the Jazz are the best team in the West, according to their record.
We leave that game and we go from one useless big man to the most useful big man in the game, Nikola Jokic, our MVP. They have a series with the Phoenix Suns. We're watching Devin Booker score with immunity. Like, it's just whenever he wants, he's pulling up and dropping the ball. Where do you think this series is going?
So I was not able to stay up. It's past my bedtime to watch a game that late. And I did think Phoenix would win, so I was not surprised to see that in the morning. I just think that Phoenix has a little bit more talent, and it partly is because of the injuries that Denver has suffered. Jokic carried them through that first round series, and I just think Phoenix has too much. I think Phoenix is going to potentially win the West. I think a Phoenix and Clippers finals is great, and we'll kind of forecast that in a second. But Phoenix is just playing so well, and like you said, Devin Booker, if between him and Durant, like, they just look unstoppable. I don't know how you guard them, and they do it a little bit differently, but it's incredible to see the impact Chris Paul has had, the great signings and trades and drafting that James Jones has done, and I'm definitely on the Suns bandwagon right now.
And you can tell the things that Devin Booker has worked on. And this is my thing with Tyler Hero and with Bam Adebayo. It's like, it takes off seasons, guys. It really does. You can see the things Booker has worked on. And honestly, in 2 years, Devin Booker is going to be a legitimate problem, because at that point, his handle should be strengthened. And I mean, it's Suns for me too. Do you want to play the what if we could have got a Clippers Nuggets, a healthy Nuggets Western Conference Finals? Because that I just danced around in my head, and it's a ridiculous matchup.
Yeah, these four teams are just excellent. I love watching all four of them play. The healthy Nuggets, I loved watching them all year.
Oh, they were so fun.
I really like Campazzo, just the hustle, run around and you know, just be a pest essentially. And Porter Jr. has been playing great. I know he's got a little bit of a back issue right now. That's the other concern I have, is his health. It's wow. That would be a hell of a matchup.
Dude, it would have been a crazy matchup, and I would have loved to see it, because honestly, on paper, that those lineups are pretty even.
Oh yeah. That would be a great one. If we could go for like a West Coast third place game where the losers play each other on, like, I don't know, NBA TV at like noon.
You don't want to go for the Nickelodeon with the slime dunk effects? Yeah.
Perfect. We got it. Maybe even a sponsor there. Maybe Nickelodeon wants to sponsor our podcast.
Oh, please make that call. Never mind. I'll call him right after this. I know a guy. So you have all these teams now we just talked about. There's going to be a finals eventually. Who do you think's coming out of the East? Who do you think's coming out of the West?
I'm going Brooklyn Nets in the East. I'm going Phoenix Suns in the West. And I am going to go Phoenix.
I it's funny. We had all this time to think about this, and I'm still second guessing myself. I think I'm going Clippers out of the West. And the Brooklyn Nets out of the East. I can't see anybody stopping the Nets. Only chance is that the Hawks go absolutely supernova, don't miss shots, and play them off the court. But the Clippers just seem unstoppable at the moment. With in that conference, they seem pretty unstoppable. I don't know, with Kawhi clicking the way he is right now, he can get a bucket whenever he needs it, and the rest of those guys can step up to keep the game competitive. The Suns have a really good chance to scheme against the Nets, though, or against the Clippers.
Out of those eight, how many of the eight would you say have a realistic chance to win the championship?
Three.
And I think we share the same three. Would you say Nets, Suns, Clippers?
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, when it comes down to winning a seven-game series, those are the only three teams I think that have any realistic shot at it.
And, you know, obviously injuries could factor into that, but I would say those are the three best teams.
And what do they all have in common? A guy that could be the best guy on the floor in any given night. Like, those three teams also hold the best players that are left in the playoffs. So that's always, to me, how you win basketball games.
All right, as we close things up, unfortunately, we do not have a business sponsor this week from the South Florida region. Rusty Pelican, Polo Tropical, Miami Subs, they've all dropped out. So we have a new sponsor. Mm-hmm. It's out of the region. We're very excited. And this episode is brought to you by the only playoff win the Knicks have had in the last 10 years.
Yeah!
Let's all celebrate across the street at the Garden at Sbarro's.